This summer, we're bringing you double koi gig.
Let's get to the Russo goal straight away. Like, a back heel nutmeg. Like, it was... for me, it was one of the moments of the tournament.
Subscribe to the OTB Koi Gig pod on the OTB Sports app now.
You ain't shit! I wish I was 50 years younger and I'd kick your ass.
My fans can be the harshest critics, you know.
And they often are.
A wife is often the harshest critic of her husband.
I thought I was invincible. That's what you're trained to believe as a sports person.
There was 4 million people in Ireland who knew much more about managing football teams than I did. When it comes to music, I can spoof at the best.
Your sporting career is the best time you'll have, and, you know, you have to hang on to it for as long as your life, because everything else is pretty crappy.
And this is not light. Stephen Rothschild has never spoken to Jim McGuinness in his life.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you 3 to 5 this evening. This is the Saturday panel looking ahead to the Ladies All-Ireland Football Finals at Croke Park tomorrow with the TG Cahir Junior Final between Antrim and Fermanagh at 11.45. Leash and Wexford contesting the intermediate decider at 1.45. Then the senior final, seeing Meath and Kerry going head-to-head at 4. Joining me on the line to talk all things ladies football, the four-time All-Ireland winner with Mayo and current AFLW player with the Greater Western Sydney Giants, Cora Staunton. Four-time All-Ireland winner with Dublin, Lindsay Davey, and current Donegal skipper Niamh McLaughlin. Cora, Lindsay and Niamh, how are you all doing today?
Oh, good, thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Great to see you and great to hear from you. We'll just get straight into the preview of Meath, Kerry and the other matches tomorrow, and then we'll expand upon other issues, folks. Cora, so Kerry have been a Division 2 side. They haven't won an All-Ireland since 1993. We saw Meath's progress through intermediate level, won the All-Ireland Chalk Dublin last year. Are Kerry improving the way Meath did? How have they got to the last game of the year?
Yeah, I think Kerry are very much the story of the year again, a bit like the way Meath came through last year. Division 2 winners, but Armagh, a very good Armagh team in Division 2 final. Yeah, and have progressed nicely through, obviously, the Munster campaign, losing to Cork, their only defeat in the championship, and progressed nicely through the round robin stages and obviously quarter final and semi final. And, you know, they've bet some very good teams along the way, Galway in the round robin, and then obviously Mayo and Armagh in the quarter and semi final. So, yeah, it's very much living up to the way Meath were last year, coming off the intermediate and Division 2. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a cracking final. You know, I know a lot of people are putting Meath the strong favourites, rightly so, on the back of being All-Ireland champions last year. But, you know, from what I've seen of Kerry this year, and in particular against, you know, Mayo, Armagh and against Galway, they've been phenomenal. So, yeah, they've huge firepower up front. So I think it's going to be a clash of two very different styles of play, a very attack-minded Kerry team and a very defensive Meath team. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a cracker of a final, just like last year.
And Cora, maybe the Kerry women's team will be given a confidence boost by what happened last weekend. Surely everybody's going to be buzzing in a good frame of mind.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's, you know, obviously the county after winning the All-Ireland for the first time in, what was it, 8 years?
Yeah.
You know, so you'd hope the Kerry crowd would get out to support the women a week on. You know, probably a little bit like ourselves in Dublin when we played Dublin in 2017. It was Mayo and Dublin in the men's final, and a huge crowd came out that day. So, yeah, as I said, you know, Kerry haven't been in All-Ireland since 2012. That's 10 years ago, and they haven't won one since 1993. So, yeah, I it's huge for this team and especially a number of players that has been around, you know, a long, long time, like Sir Louise and Mara Hartig, you know, Anna Galvin, Lorraine Scanlon, Coach Lins. There's girls there that, you know, have been there a long, long time and have been there in 2012 and had the hurt of the defeat against Cork that year. And, you know, they've had to wait 10 years to get back to an All-Ireland final. So I'm sure they're chomping at the bit in readiness for tomorrow's game.
Yeah, Lindsay, like Kerry have been scoring a lot of goals, 16 in the championship. Louise Niamh Hurtig, as Cora mentioned there, she's had 322. Is that goal threat then vital for Kerry to win tomorrow?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think Kerry have such attack and firepower, but I think my one concern about them is I don't think they would have come up against a defensive system just like Meath's. As much as you train for it, you know, until you're in the heat of the battle and you're up against it, it's a very difficult system to break down. Like, they're so effective at it. And I think the key thing for Kerry is, obviously, we know they didn't get goal threats, but I think sticking to how they kind of played against Mayo and Armagh, playing the ball wide, not carrying it into contact, And just being patient with their scores. Like, we know Louise Mihurtig is on fire for them this year, and I think she's going to be one that's going to be vital for her taking her scores from distance. So, yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how they deal with Meade's defensive setup. But I think if any team, I think they're more than capable to kind of break that down. And like Cora said, I think we're in for a cracking battle.
Did Meath's relentless progress through the ranks of Gaelic football kind of shock you, Lindsay? Obviously, it didn't go your way last year and you got revenge on them in Leinster, but you didn't get the chance this year to meet them again.
Yeah, like, look, they're a fantastic team. They've been up and coming, and, you know, they've had that heartache of the intermediate finals and, you know, progressed to senior. But I think they're just so confident in the structure that they play. Like, it's funny, we actually would have played them, I think it was 2020, in a challenge game. And I was very impressed with them that day. And funnily enough, we played Kerry earlier this year. And again, I was very impressed with just their ability to open us up and get goals. So I think with the progress of them, their two teams are very confident in their systems and their style of play. But yeah, with me last year, look, obviously, things didn't go to plan. And we would have loved to have got another crack at them this year. But sure, look, that's how it goes.
Yeah, Niamh, you got first-hand experience of me just recently. What was your feeling on the day? It was a close match, but just you came out on the wrong side.
Yeah, I think just echoing what the girls have already said there, you know, everyone knows they're very strong defensively, and, you know, their skill level and their patience moving forward and moving the hands through the ball, you know, makes it really hard to combat that attacking game that they have. And, you know, the one of the ways to kind of combat that is to try and go defensive against them, but in turn that just kind of invites them onto you. So, you know, they have people and players all over the pitch well able to take their scores from distance. And, you know, looking at Kerry, they have that as well. So I think if they can avoid kind of running into the traps that Meath set and take their scores from distance, I think that'll be a big thing.
That counter-attack and high press that Meath employ, Niamh, it's based on a lot of physical conditioning. You have to be fit.
100%. And, you know, I think, you know, looking at Dublin as well, Dublin are very good at pressing high up the ball, and they cause Meath a lot of problems, you know, high up the pitch and everyone going player to player. You know, and similarly, Kerry are a very physical and aggressive team. So I think if they can decide to push high, it'll make life very awkward for Meath. And then going forward for Kerry, I think that'll cause Meath, you know, a good lot of problems as well. As I said, shooting from distance, I think, will be the big one.
It's great, Cora, that we now know as kind of household names, Emma Duggan and Vicky Wall, because maybe a year and a half ago, the general population wouldn't have known them. That is one of the real benefits of having these games. We'd have a lot of attendance. They're like on terrestrial television, TG Cahir. That's what we want, more of these and more counties and counties like Donegal, to get hope that if Meath can do it, that the Cork and Dublin haven't been out of an All-Ireland final since 2002. So this is, even though Meath are the All-Ireland champions, there's a degree of freshness and novelty to this, isn't there, Cora?
Yeah, there certainly is. I think this year, more so than any year, and I think that probably the quarterfinals is where all that kind of freshness was probably shown. You know, it's probably shown through the stages of the round robin. But I suppose, obviously, Donegal's defeat of Dublin in the quarterfinal, and then Mayo's defeat of Cork, and even, you know, Kerry's defeat of Armagh. Armagh would probably have gone in favourites, even though Kerry had beat them in the league final. You know, Armagh had been, you know, a team that would be touted for All-Ireland success, and probably Kerry weren't. So, yeah, I think that round of quarterfinals, you know, a couple of weeks back was really when you kind of seen that the championship had opened up. And, you know, even when the season is done, and whether it's Meath or Kerry that win the All-Ireland tomorrow, I think there's a lot of teams that will go away and will probably have a little bit of a pep in their step come, you know, pre-season when that starts, whether it's November or whenever it might be. Because they've seen that the teams like Meath and Kerry and Donegal and Mayo and you know, Armagh to a lesser extent and the Galways, they'll all feel that they have a huge chance to get All-Ireland success, get to a final and get All-Ireland success. Where I probably, years gone by, when you come up against that Cork team, you know, you always, you know, hoped that you get success, but it was a lot harder. And then obviously Dublin took over that mantle, where now I think it's, you know, it's anyone's game. You know, Meath might say different, you know, if they win two in a row tomorrow. But yeah, I do think there's a real freshness in the game, and there's probably really 6-7 teams that can, you know, that can win the All-Ireland, and it's not saying, oh, it's not out of hope. It's actually that they can go on and win the All-Ireland. So, yeah, I do think that's it's really good for ladies football that that's happening now, and there's a lot of teams that are competing for the senior championship.
And you've gotten to that semi-final, beating the Dubs. Do you now believe, is there now a impetus in Donegal that you can actually go and win this Brendan Martin Cup in the next few years?
Yeah, definitely. Look, that's the aim every year for us. You know, the last few years we've pushed Dublin close, but you know, they just were able to finish the game out and finish stronger than us. Like, we always believed that we had that performance in us. I know that's probably similar to the likes of Kerry and Meath, you know, and Mayo even as well, you know, getting to the semi-final. It's that's what girls are playing for. You know, we're not just playing to make up the numbers, we're playing to win the All-Ireland. So I think, you know, obviously beating a team like Dublin is brilliant, but at the end of the day, you know, we want to be aiming for an All-Ireland final and challenging for the cup on the last day of the season, you know.
Lindsay, what do you remember from the finals you're involved in? Are there many nerves? Is it a blur? Is it very vivid? What stands out in your memory bank from the days you played All-Ireland finals?
I suppose last year was probably, you know, it was the first time I've had the attendance. Like 2020, you would have been playing in an empty stadium and you're back to attendance. So there was definitely an air of excitement around it. Yeah, look, against any team, you're always going to be very nervous going into it, but it's just trying to manage those nerves as best as you can. But I think there's always going to be a bit of mix between nerves and excitement going into a big game like this.
And how did you manage it successfully, as it were? Because you, obviously you were going for 5 in a row. There was those other years that you did win. You had tight games. How did Mick Bowen get the best out of you? What was the best process for you on the day?
I suppose for us, it's always for just probably sticking about the same routine with me. You know, it's always about focusing just on my nutrition, hydration, stuff before the game, making sure I'm getting plenty of sleep, going to do plenty of swims in the sea, just a lot of, you know, recovery and stuff. So for me, it was all about just sticking to the kind of same process and not really mixing it up too much. Nothing too exciting really for a game, but yeah, look, obviously, the week of the game as well, there's just so much excitement going in, and I think a part of it, you have to really enjoy that buzz as well as just being focused going in. So it's just trying to kind of take everything in while you can as well.
Because Cork were there as dominant team for so long, Lindsay, you might have felt, you know, I'm never going to get over Cork, but winning must have been worth all the sacrifices then.
Yeah, like, geez, we lost 3 finals in a row to Cork, and I suppose we got to a stage where you thought you were never kind of going to get over the line. And I suppose when Mick came in then, you know, I don't think we would have foreseen the success that we had with him. So I've been very lucky to have been part of such a successful team. And it was just unfortunate last year, kind of didn't go our way. But, you know, we got beaten by the better team on the day, so you can have no complaints about that. But I suppose, look, that's the joy of football. When you're playing for days like that to get out in Croke Park.
Corey, you were involved in Mayo, as we all know, at such a young age. And then 2000, you're an 18-year-old, you score 2 goals in the final. 2003, you lob in a free kick and you win the All-Ireland again. When you're so young, do you not even think about it? Do you not even think about the consequences? Do you not even think about losing when you're so young and you're just playing free?
I think you're probably a little, you don't probably have as many nerves as the older you get, and you've been there before. I think, yeah, certainly the nerves are probably more. I suppose for me, obviously my first 2 All-Irelands we won, and then we lost the 3 in a row to Laois, and then we won another 2 together. So I think when you feel the defeat, that's probably where it gets a little bit harder. You think, yeah, you're riding the crest of a wave when you haven't lost one, but then when you certainly do lose one, you know, that kind of little bit of fear is put into you of, you know that what that feeling is like. So as a younger player, yeah, you're probably certainly, you know, my nerves would be a lot more when I would be playing later into my career, because I suppose you value them more as a young player. You probably think this is going to happen year in, year out, and unfortunately it doesn't. But yeah, certainly, I can imagine the older kind of Kerry girls that have been around the block for a long time, and it might be, you know, their last hurrah, their nerves will certainly be there. But really nerves when the ball is thrown in and the game, you know, starts. They really all do go out. I know people do say that, but they do really go away, and it's just like another match, and you just get on with it, and you're so engrossed in the game. You kind of just don't think about anything else, only what's the next ball or what's ahead of you.
And is that the case now for you and Aussie Rules, Cora?
Yeah, I don't know about that. Yeah, it's you know, I suppose I don't know the game well enough here. Even though I'm playing it now 6 seasons, it's, yeah, I'm still learning the game. So yeah, I just really worry about my job. Yeah, probably I'm probably not as nervous playing Aussie rules as I was Gaelic football, because there's probably not as much expectation put on me over here as there was at home. So yeah, it's all about just trying to get my game right, and as Lindsay said, trying to get your performance right, and you know, for me it's trying to be better than I was last season, and you know, trying to be better than I was last game. So yeah, it's just about getting myself right, and getting, certainly at my age, just keeping my body right.
We saw with David Clifford the pressure of expectation. Did you feel that pressure during your career, Cora? David was able to take it in a stride, and obviously you were as well, but is it a real thing when a county's hanging its hat on you?
Yeah, I suppose at times there's pressure, you know, and the girls are well know, you know, when you're a key forward and you're expected to, you know, probably kick 1-5, 1-6 or whatever it might be in a game. And, you know, certainly when you're a free taker, there's probably that little bit of extra pressure put on you. You know, a lot of the pressure, I suppose, it comes from internally as well. It comes from yourself to, you know, try and have consistency in performance. You know, if you want to be at the top of your game, it's all about having consistent performance, you know, week in, week out. Yeah, and obviously then there's that external pressure, whether it's from fans or media or whoever it might be. But yeah, if you want to be, you know, known as a good player, you know, that's what it's all about. It's about being consistent week in, week out, and putting in the performances. So, yeah, there's pressure. But you know what? When I was playing, I loved that extra bit of pressure. It probably made you perform better and you know, complete your role in a better performance.
Lindsay, do you see tomorrow's Meath Kerry game about systems or matchups specifically?
I don't know. I think it's going to be a very intriguing battle. I think definitely some of the matchups are going to be really interesting. You know, you have the like of, you know, Emma Duggan is one who's kind of firing well for them out the pitch. Obviously, Vicky Wall's a massive threat. Stacey Grimes gets on a lot of ball, but like she's only scored since the provincial final. She's only scored 1 point from play. 19 of her scores have been from frees. So I think not giving away scoreable frees for Kerry is going to be something that they need to be mindful of. And then as well, the scoring threats that you have with Kerry, you know, obviously we mentioned Louise Mahertic, you know, Shefa O'Shea, Niamh Carmody, who has been playing absolutely fantastic football the past couple of weeks. She's going to be a really key player for them, just her vision. And their, I think Kerry's ability to send long ball in quickly is going to be key to their success tomorrow. Again, Paris McCarthy is another one that they're going to have to look out for. So I think there's going to be a lot of key battles out there that both teams are going to be focused on. But yeah, I think it's definitely going to come down to the systems as well. Obviously, Kerry are going to be very attack-minded. You know, like I said, since the provincial, they scored 14 goals to Meade's 3. But again, that just goes to show with Meade, they've only conceded 3 goals as well. So their ability to shut out goals and stop it. It's going to be very interesting to see how Kerry deal with that. So I think it's going to be a mix of both tactically how they set up and then how they control the key battles throughout the pitch as well.
Niamh, a moment is always important as well. Like Emma Duggan's moment, that goal earlier on last year, that really set the whole tone for the whole game, because with an early goal, with any goal, we didn't have a goal in the men's final last week, it just completely turns a game in the fact that the other team has to react, and then systems and matchups go out the window a bit.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's one of those things that you can try and train for, but at the end of the day, it comes down to the match on the day. And as you said, how people kind of deal with that. You know, I think the Kerry's tactical approach will be key. I think Meath aren't going to change their system. They never do, no matter who they're playing for. I think if Kerry sit back in big numbers, it's going to suit Meath. But if Kerry can go for it early and put Meath on the back foot, I think it'll be a very interesting battle. You know, Meath never score a huge amount. So I think if a team like Kerry can get ahead of them, especially going down the home straight, you know, 3 or 4 points, I think it's something that Meath won't be used to. And, you know, they'll have to chase the game, maybe leaving gaps at the end, you know. But if Kerry are kind of in control, whether it's a point or 2 points, you know, you've seen against us 2 weeks ago, their game management was excellent and they were able to work it out from the corner across the back. You know, we probably could have had more contact on them higher up the pitch, but they were able to work it and be patient. And, you know, Emma Duggan was able to finish it off with a score at the end.
This is the Saturday panel. We're previewing tomorrow's Ladies All-Ireland Football Finals with Cora Staunton, Lindsay Davey and Niamh McLaughlin. You've got a question for any of the panel, you can text us 53106 for a cost of 30 cents. We're going to break for the news now, but plenty more to talk about after two, including the lure of Australia. We know Vicky Wall is going down under. Life outside football for our panel. The men's game, even the vacancies in Donegal, in Mayo, and with Dublin's obviously lost to Kerry in the semi-final, the state of the nation in Dublin, but also the state of ladies football and how it's growing, more interest in the game from people going to the matches, broadcasters, and also how women's sport is changing with the Women's Euros this weekend as well, sellout crowd for England and Germany, and how the amplification of women's sport can be enhanced across soccer, across rugby with these professional contracts coming in to the RFU and across ladies football. So Cora Staunton, Lindsay Davey and Niamh McLaughlin with us between 2:30. We're back after the news.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you 3-5. Rangers have beaten Livingston 2-1 on the opening day of the Scottish Premiership season. Now, this is part two of the Saturday panel previewing the Ladies All-Ireland Football Finals at Croke Park tomorrow with the four-time All-Ireland winner with Mayo and current AFLW player with the Greater Western Sydney Giants, Cora Staunton, four-time All-Ireland winner with the Dubs, Lindsay Davey, and current Donegal captain, Niamh McLaughlin. So the TG Carr Junior Final between Antrim and Fermanagh at 11:45 tomorrow at Croke Park. Laois and Wexford contesting the intermediate decider at 1:45, and then the senior final, Meath against Kerry, going head to head at 4. The state of the game, Cora, like when you were playing it even 20 years ago, not all finals were at Croke Park, I believe. Do you feel the game is in a healthy place at the moment?
Yeah, I do think it's at a healthy place. I think it has been for a while. You know, obviously when I started playing, you know, it was always on the up. It was growing and growing. There probably wasn't, you know, as many teams that were competing at the highest stage. But as I said earlier on, there's more and more teams now that you know, give themselves a really good chance, you know, realistic chance of All-Ireland success. So, yeah, and you can obviously see the benefit of, you know, in the intermediate championship as well, with Meath coming through that and their success. So, yeah, no, I think the game is, you know, is in a very healthy state. Obviously, there's the debate around, you know, AFL and losing some of our top stars to that. I think that's probably the only issue that they have at the moment. And, you know, I think that's going to be an ongoing issue, certainly. With the number of girls that's obviously coming to Australia and a lot of them, you know, being our biggest stars, with two of them on show tomorrow in Orla Lally and Vicky Wall. So, yeah, I know that's a concern for a lot of counties and a lot of county managers throughout Ireland. But, yeah, certainly the game's in a very healthy, competitive state, in a sense, which a lot of teams there have a genuine chance of All-Ireland success. That's always a good sign.
Is there a right to be concerned? I mean, you're down there, you're experiencing it, Cora. Can both things coexist?
Like, probably not now the way they're going. They have coexisted for the last number of years. Obviously, this is my sixth season down here. And, you know, for the last five seasons, they worked, you know, on opposite ends of the calendar, where, you know, the season over here was finished in kind of April time and girls went home and could play the end of the kind of the league and into their championship run. And then they were probably getting majority of their club football in. Obviously, with the season swinging around this year, with our season starting at the end of August, you know, girls expected out probably June time. And that's only going to extend. The season is only going to get earlier by 2 or 3 weeks every year. You know, so the notion of being able to play inter-county football and AFLW, well, that was a thing for the past 5 years. It's not going to be possible anymore. And yeah, I suppose obviously you have to say it's a worry with the caliber of players, I suppose, that's been lost. As I said, the two girls I mentioned, they're in the All-Ireland final tomorrow. Obviously the Mayo losing, you know, particularly a high number of stars and the two Kelly sisters, Sarah Rowe, Aileen Gilroy and Rachel Kearns. Rachel, the only one of the five that played with Mayo this year. The other four opted not to play and came back early to be with their club. So, you know, for I only can really speak for Mayo alone, but to lose five players, you know, starting out their starting 15 is a huge number. So, Is there demand for more Irish down here? There certainly is.
Is there targeting, Cora? Is there specific targeting of Irish players?
There's probably a little bit of both. There's probably, you know, if I give an example, Vicky Wall was certainly targeted to come down under, or they probably like to use the word scouted over here. But then there's also girls that maybe weren't scouted but have looked to come over. They've looked themselves to come over. So, you know, if you look at the 21 girls that will play in the AFLW season 7 here, I'd probably imagine, at a guess, probably, 5 or 6 of that 21 that's over here were scouted to come over, where the other maybe 14 or 15, you know, tried to get over here themselves. So, there certainly is scouting, but it's not of the whole amount that's over here. Girls are just genuinely interested to come over. They see it as a career. They see it as obviously a huge lifestyle, getting to move to Australia for a number of years. And, obviously the pay deal that was brokered there, you know, a couple of months ago, with the 94% increase in wages, now girls can make quite a good living from it. And, you know, if you come over as a 19, 20-year-old or even a 21-year-old, you know, you could have a 10-year career doing it, so, or more. It is a hugely enticing thing, where I suppose the option to play a professional team sport in Ireland is probably now, at the moment, it's probably limited to the rugby sevens. I know there's talks about
the 15s will get contracts,
getting contracts, but there's probably no other aspect of trying to have professional sport, and obviously with the similarities between AFL and ladies football, and you know, the crossover and how quickly you can adapt to the other game. It's a huge enticement. If you're a girl that's, you know, just after coming out of college, finished 4 years in college, and you either got scouted to come over, or you looked into trying to come over yourself and you got offered a contract, you know, it's a very livable wage now that they can, you know, make money and you know, have a very good life. So it's going to be hard in the game when you're losing, you know, if you're, you know, and rightly so. I know Eamon Murray was very disappointed initially when Vicky Wall was signed, and then now Orla Lally, and you know, there's talks of more for next season. When you're losing 2 or 3 of your biggest stars from your team, it's very, very difficult, and it's very, very difficult to manage both, you know. Probably, you know, if you look at players, it's probably managed both very well over the last probably number of seasons. Sinead Goldrick from Dublin has probably been your best example. But as I said, now that's gone. You know, when Vicky and Orla, you know, do come over after the All-Ireland final, that will be their last time they represent Meads,
right,
while playing AFL. They decide to step away from AFL, they're not going to be able to represent Meads.
Okay, because I think Vicky did have an aspiration to return to Meads next year, so...
Realistically, she might be able to return for some of the league campaign, but certainly once championship comes around, unless ladies football changes, that's not going to happen. I can't see it happening, because she's going to miss majority of pre-season.
Okay.
When you're contracted to the club, as they are 12-month contracts now, you know, they have the right to tell you when to come back.
Lindsay, how do you feel about the whole thing?
Look, I suppose it's one of those things, isn't it? You can understand why girls want to go over. It's a massive opportunity for them. I suppose playing the game as well, but it's an opportunity to travel and stuff as well. So you wouldn't begrudge anyone for going over. But like Cora said, it's tough when you're seeing some of the top players in the game go. And like, look, Meath are in their second All-Ireland now, but losing the likes of, I know we say Vicky Wall, but Orla Lally is massive to that structure as well. Eric O'Shea from Cork, Blaheen Macken from Armagh as well. Look at all the Mayo girls. Do you know, if Mayo had those players this year, would Mayo possibly be in an All-Ireland this year? Do you know, and when you're watching the game, you want to see the best players playing. So it is a pity to see them going, but you wouldn't begrudge anyone to turn down that opportunity either.
How do you feel about it, Niamh? Is too much of it going on, or is just an understandable thing in a market which is pay versus amateur, that the county is important, but also there's life as well?
Yeah, I think, you know, girls give so much to their county over so many years, and I'm sure it's not an easy decision to make. It's definitely a hard decision for them, and you know, you have the lure of, like Cora said, you know, living that professional lifestyle, you know, training how many times a week that you might be living, you know, in Australia, obviously, which is very appealing, versus, you know, playing and representing your county with your teammates and your friends that you have done for so many years. It's a difficult one, you know. You can definitely see two sides to the, you know, to the coin, and you know, we haven't been affected by it so much this last wee while. You know, obviously Yvonne Bonner was one of that first group that went over, and she's the kind of girl that could put her foot to any sport if she wanted. And obviously Katie Heron as well went over. You know, it was COVID around that time that Katie went, so she was home earlier then. But you know, obviously if you're Mayo and you're losing five players that have gone, you know, five very influential and very, very, you know, good footballers, and then you have the likes of Aileen Gilroy as well, who hasn't been involved with me over the last few years, you can see why, you know, people might be thinking, geez, look what we could do with them if this is what we can do when they're not here at the minute, especially Mayo this year. So you know, I can see both sides of it. I suppose I'm probably pretty neutral at the minute because I haven't had to worry too much about it in the last wee while from a Donegal side of things. But you know, we'll just see how it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because Niamh, because you were a soccer player, Newcastle, Sunderland, and you had a bad cruciate injury, so you've almost tasted this lifestyle and this potential professional lifestyle.
Yeah, like I would have played with Sunderland when I studied at university, and you know, that at the time we were in the Women's Super League. So you know, we were training 3 and 4 or 5 nights a week, gym, etc. And at that time when I played, Sunderland actually were relegated. The whole Women's Super League had been restructured, so even though we finished 6th or 7th in the league, we were ended up being relegated just because of the finance and the sport wasn't there for the women. Now that's all changed at the minute, and it's you know, it's definitely getting a lot better, and you can see obviously, you know, the big push that the FA has put on soccer in England at the minute, and the way that the English teams have gone. And I suppose if you invest in the teams that way, that's what's going to happen. And I know that's starting here at grassroots, you know, with the likes of the Irish women's team, who have a big game coming up in September. And you know, for girls who are playing football here in Ireland at inter-county level, you know, they're putting as much effort in as people in that professional kind of setting, you know. And so how can you sort of say to someone, you know, you should stay here and not get paid if you're being offered, you know, getting a wage or whatever it might be over in Australia as such.
There has been a shift, hasn't there, Lindsay? Like, you got a sellout Wembley tomorrow for Germany, France. We had that Barcelona Real Madrid game with over 90,000. The girls in green, we could be going to Australia and New Zealand. To me, there's been a big shift or something like that. Would you agree that there's been a breakthrough in terms of women's sport just getting more parity than it was?
Sorry, was that for me?
Yes, Lindsay, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, like, there's been a great shift in the past couple of years. Look, even with Lidl coming on, you know, like, we got to play in Croke Park, I think it was 2019, with over 56,000 people in coming into sport. As far as I'm aware, there's a massive support coming out tomorrow. I think it's well over 40,000, which is fantastic to be seen. So look, even with the Irish sports, like, Irish sports just doing so well at the moment, and it is getting a lot of publicity. And it's great, like, that's what we want. I think one of the pity is at the moment, I suppose, with our championship, was we probably haven't got as much coverage this year because of the season overlapping with the men, and you know, not all the games has been televised. So I think probably the coverage this year has been probably a bit less than before. But I think that structure may be looked at next year. So look, hopefully next year we'll have a lot more games being televised, and you know, the coverage won't be kind of getting dampened down because of its clashing with the men's game.
It's interesting, Cora, that, you know, when you think about the men's game and hurling or football, there's no easy route to professionalism, as it were, unless it's done within the organisation itself. And that's not going to happen in the GA in the next few years. But with the Australian Women's Football League, there is a route towards professionalism, and there's an appetite for Irish players who've got similar skills. It seems from what you're saying, Cora, that this thing is only going to get bigger and bigger in Australia.
Yeah, for the next while, for sure. I think it would have probably got bigger, and I mean by numbers, you know. It started off, obviously, when I came out, I was the first one, and then the second year, I think there was 5, and then we had a big shift up, I think, to maybe 14, and it risen. But COVID obviously hit, and when COVID hit over here, that was a big issue, because obviously scouts couldn't get over, or girls couldn't get over. It was very difficult to get to Australia visa-wise and stuff, so for the last kind of 2 years, it's stabilized at the same number. I think we've had maybe 14 Irish for the last two, kind of 2 years, give or take one. But yeah, certainly, obviously, with the borders opening here in Australia a number of months ago, and things quite kind of back to normal, you know, post-COVID, the numbers are going to increase, you know. Obviously, you know, the girls that come out, are they're coming out for the first time this year. You know, I heard about them girls probably, you know, 3 or 4 months ago. And, you know, I've probably heard about 7 or 8 girls there, you know, looking to come out or have been looked at to come out, you know, for the next season. Obviously, these two seasons that we've played in, there's only going to be 3 months apart of the two pre-seasons. We finished in April and pre-season started back in June for us. So, you know, there's obviously going to be a good gap this year. We'll finish at Christmas and the next pre-season probably won't start till the end of May. But yeah, in that period of time, you know, as I said, I've already heard about 7 or 8 girls that, you know, certainly are due to come out.
Yeah.
For season 8, it will be at that stage. And you know, that's probably only going to grow. You know, if that kind of number goes up towards 30, you know, I expect probably over the next number of years anyways, for that number to grow, just because the academy system here, which is your underage system, still isn't strong enough, you know, for girls coming through. The girls are there, but they're just not developed skill-wise, physical-wise and all that yet. Maybe in 10, 15 years' time, there'll be so many of them, there won't be a need for it. It is a massive growing sport. So the numbers of Irish maybe won't be as big then, but there'll always be a need for Irish because they just look at us in a different way. I suppose our skills and what we do things very differently to what they do. We're not your normal AFL player, and I think they like that. And I suppose they've seen how the game has grown right throughout Europe and in Ireland, and the coverage that it's getting at home. You know, the AFL in the men's side of the game are trying to sell the game, you know, worldwide. You know, there's talks of that their TV deal, which is due for renewal very soon, that they're pushing towards, you know, America and stuff like that. With the CEO of the AFL was over there lately. So they're trying to grow the game themselves over here, okay, both men and women, internationally. And yeah, you know, if you're asking me in a couple of years' time, that number would be probably at least 40 plus, I'd imagine, over the next kind of 5-ish years.
So where's the money coming from to support the growth of women's AFL, Cora? Is it broadcast revenue? Is it sponsorships? Or is it money coming from the men's game?
It's early days. It's certainly money coming from the men's game. You know, Don't quote me. It's on exact figures now, but you know, I think right, the men's TV rights go every 3 years, and the last deal was worth something like 3.2 billion, and they're up for discussion. I think they're up at the end of this season for the men. So yeah, a lot of that comes from the men's TV rights, and you know, in the last kind of, I think it's 2 seasons, for the first few seasons of the women's competitions, you know, it was free entry. Now they've started charging. And we've had our own broadcast deal, I think, for the first time maybe last season. So the growth of the game here from an underage point of view of females is gone through the roof. I couldn't even tell you the figures. Even here in New South Wales, they don't have enough green space to accommodate young girls picking up the sport. So it's a massive sport, and it's a sport I'd kind of reference to a bit like the way the Irish women's soccer team and the FAI, and they're all one. You know, they don't differentiate between, like at home, it's ladies football and it's men football, and it's different organisations. It's the same organisation that runs everything.
Right.
It's all one. So, you know, they look after the women's as the men. They want, there's a big push to grow the game. There's a big push at the moment to have women coaches in the game, both in the men's space and in the women's space. So, yeah, there's a big push. And obviously, I suppose that was probably seen probably 2 months ago with the pay deal. And the 94% pay increase, and the next push now is to have it fully professional by 2026.
And does that give you a great lifestyle then, Cora, you know, living in Australia? You know, you got the good weather, you know, you're paid. There's people out there from your own GA community from the past. It seems like quite an easy sell.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, it is. Yeah, for me, it's an easy sell. Like I don't work when I'm out here. I you know, I do a bit around the club from a coaching point of view. But yeah, you know, I'm fully professional when I'm here. So, you know, I just spend time on trying to get myself right, get my body right, and whatever that might be, if it's for training or for matches. You know, I've plenty of time to get myself right. I suppose I only can look back at my time when I was playing with Mayo. You know, you're trying to work like everyone else is, you know, whatever your job is, you know, 9 to 5. In Lindsay's case, it's different. I know she's with the fire brigade. You know, you're trying to work shift work, whatever it might be. You know, it's very difficult. So sometimes you're trying to fit in morning gym sessions. You're going to work and then you're trying to go to training. Or I even find it when I go home for the couple of months that I'm home, life is so busy for that period of time, and you come back here and you have so much downtime and time to get things right. So, yeah, there's a huge draw. Obviously, Sydney and the weather and all of that is a huge draw as well. And, yeah, it's just, you know, I suppose when I was growing up, I always thought I'd be a soccer player for Man United. That was my dream as probably a seven-year-old. That was never going to transpire, but I suppose for the last 5 years for me to get the opportunity to see what it's like to be a, you know, a full-time professional sports person, you know, it's you know, I can't even put it into words. It's just been amazing to get that opportunity. I didn't think I'd ever get it. And, you know, I can understand, as I said, girls now that are coming out as, yeah, you know, 19, 20, 21, that they'll have that opportunity for, you know, 9, 10, 11 years, which is a great lifestyle to have. And as I said, as a female growing up in my era, you never thought that you were going to get that opportunity.
Yeah. There's a really interesting window, fascinating, from Cora Staunton there on amateur and professional sport for women. Lindsay Davey, like, as she said there, you're a firefighter, you know, so you have a lot of balancing to do and unusual hours, I'd say, to be a Dublin footballer and a firefighter and paramedic as well.
Yeah, especially since doing the paramedics now, I have to say it's probably got even more difficult. If you're getting called at a hospital out of call and you're trying to leave to get back to the station to get your gear to go training, it's been very tough. And it's just constantly juggling your roster between your work roster and your training roster to see where you can find gaps that you need to get covered. But in fairness, I've always said I've been very lucky with the crew that I work with. You know, if they cover me with shifts, or they might stay back so I can go train in the evenings and come in after. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of balancing with shift work. And again, so as like Cora alluded to, it's one of the draws of probably going over to the AFL is getting to a chance to experience that professional lifestyle, you know. But as well, it's tough here though. Like I said, you would hate to see so many of the girls going over and just losing those key players. They're the ones that you want to be watching. So it will be interesting, of course, down the line to see where that goes to, like, the next year or two, how many more girls are we going to lose.
Are you an adrenaline junkie if you're in the fire service and also playing for the Dubs? Lindsay?
Pardon?
Are you an adrenaline junkie, you know, being involved in the fire service and playing for the Dubs?
Yeah, definitely. I'm probably like the busy lifestyle, just jumping from one to another. Yeah, absolutely.
Have you tackled any big blazes?
So there are not things you can really go into, but with the paramedic side of things, are definitely something in work that we're just getting busier and busier now since COVID has lifted. The calls and have just gone through the roof, like, so been very busy just these few days or these few past few months in work.
How is the physio work going for you, Niamh?
Good, yeah, keeping busy. Now when the sun is out, well, whenever we do get sun, people don't tend to come looking. You find people more in the winter months, they especially the people who are maybe a bit more, you know, social runners or social exercising. I have a big interest in sports injuries, especially knee injuries, just from my own experience. So that's something that I'm trying to build upon, and just try and get people, or girls especially, maybe, you know, a lot of the girls now, it's very prominent and have a knee and ACL injury. So it's something that I would like to try and, you know, get a bit more education around for people and people going through the rehab. And it's not as, you know, it's obviously not nice to get injured like that, but it's not like it was, where it was career ending and, you know, people can come back and, you know, even maybe better than before. So that's kind of where I'm at with things.
Is it pitches? Is it twisting? Are there things that are causing these injuries?
I think it's a mixture of everything. Yeah. I think it's a mixture of everything. I don't think you can really put it down to one thing. You know, a lot of the time, which I talk to people when I'm asked that question, is, you know, Gaelics are bigger, faster, stronger. They're able to produce more force now with the way strength and conditioning has kind of developed over time. So, you know, the faster and stronger Gaelics are, and you know, males as well, you know, the more it's going to take to slow things down. So people are playing more these days. So with more contact hours, the more chance that those things are going to happen. And then obviously for females, a big thing is, you know, hormones and even angles at the hip and knees as well. But I don't think you can really pin it on one thing, you know.
I just got a few texts in here. I'm a mentor of a junior ladies football team in a dual Dublin club. In my view, the ladies will never gain any type of parity with the men until the Ladies Gaelic Football Association and Camogie agree to go week on, week off. How does the panel feel about this? Lindsay, you're in Dublin. Would that be something that you're aware of or have a view on?
I wouldn't obviously have too much of an insight into the Camogie side of things. I know over the years, probably what we've seen in the media just with fixtures clashing. So I think definitely there needs to be probably more of a communication between the county boards, but in terms of fixture planning. But unfortunately, when they're separate associations, I think these are the things that we're going to face.
Would you like to see a merger?
I think it depends on how that merger is going to be set. You know, I think it's all well and good saying, yeah, we'll come under the one umbrella, but I think we need to figure out, like, how our team's going to be run in terms of, like, would you still be under, like, the same, would you still be under, the like, separate organisations, but under the one umbrella? Like, you know, even with the LGFA, like, they've got the rights of a TG Cadder and Lidl. So if they're going to under the one umbrella with the GAA, what happens to those sponsorship deals, do you know? So I think there is a lot of discussions that need to be had before it's just saying go under the one. Probably in terms of access to pitch and stuff, it would probably be definitely a benefit in that sense.
Absolutely, yeah. We're looking at also intermediate and junior finals tomorrow. Cora, Antrim against Fermanagh in the junior final, Laois against Wexford in the intermediate decider. We saw with Meath coming through the intermediate ranks that it is possible to go the whole way. Laois were a team that beat you in 0-1. So these are also interesting matches to talk about, just in addition to the senior game.
Yeah, I think particularly the intermediate final, I think that's going to be a cracker. Laois Wexford, I know they've met earlier on in the year as well. You know, obviously Laois have been, and Lindsay probably know better than I do, but you know, Laois have been to the fore in ladies football for a long time and kind of dipped over the last few years, but they've came very strong again. And it's a game that I expect them to win. They've some, you know, quality players. And I know from even the club scene, we've played a number of their clubs as well. You know, when Carnacun got out and went to the Leinster Championship, you know, they have some really, really quality players there. And I think, you know, for the development of Leinster football, as I said, Lindsay know better than I do, but to have Laois back up senior would be, you know, a very good thing, along with obviously Westmeath. Were there this year, they came back up, and you know, with Dublin and Meath. But yeah, I think you need the likes of the Laois and them up there, but I do think it's a game that'll be another very, very tight battle, but you know, I do expect Laois to win it.
And Antrim and Fermanagh up north as well, in a final, the junior one, Niamh.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Antrim have beat Fermanagh twice already this year, and both teams that have played in All-Ireland finals the last few years, you know, and Antrim have lost a few recently, and Fermanagh have won a few maybe before that. I don't think the results earlier on in the year will count for much, obviously, on the day in a final. You know, James Daly's over Fermanagh there. So, you know, I'm sure he'll have plenty of kind of tactics and tricks up his sleeves for getting over the line. So, look, I think it'll be an interesting one as well.
And Lindsay, how do you see the intermediate game going, Laois and Wexford?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really interesting battle. Joe, they've already played this year already and went into extra time. I think Laois were 11 points up at one stage in the game and Wexford came back. Wexford there seem to be building though as well in their past few games. And Joe, having lost last year, I think they'll be going in to get back as well. They'll have Bernie Breen back as well, which is a big boost for them this year. She had a baby last year, so she missed out on that final. But I think another interesting thing is going to be Mo Nearney for Laois and Aisling Murphy. They're both going for the Golden Boot. So it'll be interesting to see how they both get on, if it's going to be a shootout between the two of them and how both teams set up to counteract that. So, yeah, I think that's going to be a very interesting battle between both of them. And
yeah,
I think Wexford, Would possibly Pippett, maybe, just with the form that they've been playing. So it'll be interesting to see.
Wexford for Lindsay Davey in the intermediate game. We're going to call the senior match now. Niamh McLaughlin, they broke your heart. I know Meath did, but does your head say that Meath are going to do it tomorrow against Kerry?
So I was hoping you'd ask the other two girls first. Look, I don't know. It's hard to see past Meath just with their experience, but at the same time, I think Kerry have nothing to lose if they can go for it, and if they can get ahead, then it could go either way. I don't think I can call it
a draw.
A draw, yeah. Let's go for a draw.
Very good. Lindsay Davey, how'd you call the big one? Who won by how many?
Yeah, again, look, I think it's going to be a very interesting battle. I think with the form coming into it, Kerry have been playing the better football. Meath have been doing enough just to be getting over the line, as champions do. But I think if it comes down to the end, if there are only a few points in it, I think Meath could pull away. But I think even as well with keepers, you know, Molly McGurk has been fantastic for them. So look, if she's on form tomorrow and able to keep a few goals out, I think it could be Meath. But with the form that Kerry have been playing coming into this game, and if they're able to get goals and play smart against the defensive setup, I think Kerry could do it.
Okay, so a draw and Kerry. Cora Staunton, how do you see it down in Oz, Meath and Kerry tomorrow?
Yeah, I probably have to go with Lindsay. I think Meade's experience just might get them over the line. But I do worry about a little bit about Meade's form, even though, you know, they've won all their matches. Bear, obviously, the Leinster final drew with Armagh. I worry about their form, potentially of their forwards. But outside of Emma Duggan, I think their forwards that were on form last year, Niamh O'Sullivan, as Lindsay pointed out earlier, Stacey Grimes from play has been very quiet. So I do worry if Kerry in any way can nullify Emma Duggan, which is a lot easier said than done, do they have the firepower up front, or can them players that I mentioned, even Vicky Wall to a lesser extent, can they get into the bit of form that they had last year? If they can nullify Emma Duggan in some way, and Kerry, as Niamh said, I think Kerry, you know, they look at it, they haven't been in an All-Ireland final for 10 years, they haven't won one since 93. I think if they just go out and attack it and you know, don't worry about anything and go out and try and just, you know, do their best, that might be the best course of action. But I just think if it's a tight tint affair, I think Kerry's or Meath's experience are just about to get them over the line. I don't think there'll be anything much more than a point or two in it, but for now, I'd say me just about a point or two to win it.
Are you down there in Oz at the moment, Cora?
I am, surely. Coming off an inter-club this morning with a couple of stitches in my head. So, yeah, feeling a bit sorry for myself tonight. But down there, all right, certainly training away.
Mind yourself. Will you be able to? How will you be able to? Is there like an Irish tavern or bar that'll show the match tomorrow? Or will you watch it online?
No, I'll watch it online. Yeah, I'll watch it online here in the house. I think it's on 1 o'clock, 1 o'clock at night time our time. So no, yeah, certainly, like I did last week, watch the men's final. I love watching the GAA over here. It's not too bad when you're a professional athlete; you can get to sleep in Monday morning, yeah. So I don't have to worry about what time I get up at.
Okay, Cora Staunton, thanks so much for speaking to us from Australia. Dublin's Lindsay Davey and Donegal's Niamh McLaughlin. We really appreciate your time to preview the Ladies All-Ireland Football Finals. And enjoy the games tomorrow. Thanks, folks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Will.
Okay, this is Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. Rangers have beaten Livingston 2-1 in the Scottish Premiership on the opening day. 5-3-1-0-6 for your text. That was quite a stark, you know, message from Cora Staunton, really, just about the attractiveness of going to the Australian Football League for women, and the difference between professional and amateur sport. It was just spelled out pretty clearly by Cora with no agenda, and it is something to reflect upon, I suppose.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.